do not try to do everything in this business. You cannot be a jack of all trades and a master of none. You have to understand where your sweet spot is, figure out how to overlay that in the business that you're starting, and stay within that sweet spot.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Logan Freeman is the key principal, co-founder, and chief development officer of FTW Investments. He oversees the company's acquisitions and investment strategies, and he also personally selects all key investment markets and asset classes to meet the goals of investors. Prior to FTW, Logan was the director of acquisitions for a fund where he originated the concept, developed the operating plan, and created the company's products worth over $50 million. And prior to his entrepreneurial activities, Logan was an All-American collegiate football athlete at the University of Central Missouri, where he graduated in 2013. And after his final season in college, he was picked up as an undrafted free agent by the Oakland Raiders. Logan, welcome to the show.
Oh, man, Sam, thanks for having me, man. I'm really excited to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we were talking offline, you know, about how you guys are really just scaling up right now. And it sounds like at a rapid pace. Before we get there, can you give our listeners just a brief overview? Where'd you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, not many people know this, but the capital of Missouri is Jefferson City, small little city right in the middle of the state, 50,000 people. I grew up there. And, you know, one thing happened to me in Jefferson City. I learned how to work and work hard. I watched my mom work two jobs, night shift, and then sleep for 6 hours and go work another 12 hours. And when I was 14, I'm a pretty big guy. So I said, I can use my body to go make some money. Right. And so I found a way to do that by baling hay and, you know, doing dishes at a catering business when I was 14. By I was 15, I had started my first Roth IRA. I was a big Dave Ramsey guy at the time because that's all I knew. Right. We had a personal finance class in high school. So that's where I was in. So, well, I go save some money. Right. And, but what that taught me was to value the dollar and working hard for that dollar. Just so everybody understands, back in 2000 and what would that be? 2004, the minimum wage was $5.15. So just so you guys know, I was making $5.15 an hour, you know, doing dishes in the dish pit for the catering business. And, you know, I identified it as an athlete my whole life. And I was kind of relying on that as a release, had a kind of a interesting home situation that was going on. And so I found identity and comfort in athletics. I threw myself into that and got a scholarship to play football in college. And I would say in college is when my mind really started to expand. And not that I was exposed to great success principles, but I was exposed to great coaches. And what I learned was when you have a group of individuals coming together for a common goal and you actually write goals down and then achievable things to actually achieve those goals, I saw that actually come out to fruition. And it was really awesome to be a part of a team working on, in a cohesive manner. And I loved that. I loved that camaraderie. I loved the ability to be able to trust my teammate right next to me. And I was somewhat successful in college athletics. And so like you mentioned, I was picked up as an undrafted free agent with the Oakland Raiders. My claim to fame is I beat a couple guys out that they did draft, but I was cut. And when I was cut, I had to make a really big decision. And I just decided that, hey, you know, I have had three surgeries. I'm good. You know, I don't need to do this thing anymore. So I went back to school, finished my master's program. At that time, I needed a full-time job to pay for my tuition and my housing. So I got a job calling 265 cold calls a day, and I would drive an hour to that job and an hour back and go to school. But I was an offensive lineman in the NFL. So I weighed 335 pounds. Well, in 6 months, I lost 119 pounds. And so what that taught me was if you just hunker down and focus on getting yourself right and set some good goals, you can achieve those. But I also started reading. If anybody's watching this, you'll see all the books behind me. I was, you know, listening to the podcast and I got that bug of personal and professional development. And one other thing happened when I graduated with my master's degree. My father came up to help me move out, strapping 6'2", Native American, 250 pounds, couldn't walk up the stairs. And my father had battled with an addiction of drugs and alcohol his whole life, and everything was kind of coming to a head. Well, 2 or 3 weeks later from that event, my father passed away from complications of that. And so, boom, cut from the NFL, lost 120 pounds, no longer an athlete, and I lost my dad, all in a matter of 6 months. And so it was this big kind of, event in my life, three events that kind of came together. And so I had a decision to make. I could either go down a bad route, or I could choose to try to elevate myself into a different rung, so to speak, or ring, I guess. And I decided to do that. I had some great mentors that helped pull me up. And so, that's when I moved to Kansas City as a franchise consultant with the youngest franchise consultant with Jimmy John's that they had ever hired. And I learned in the big business world, you don't necessarily always get paid for your performance. And I didn't like that. So I hit a glass ceiling really quickly. I quit there and I left and went to a startup company, worked there for 2.5 years, went to another job, got married. And 15 months into that job, I was fired. And that was the moment that I said, no more am I focused on helping other people make money. I'm going to figure this thing out for myself. I had been reading all the books. My wife said, hey, I'm going to support you 100%. Go do you. And that's when I joined with that $50 million fund. And, 2.5, 3.5 years later, now we own 1,100 multifamily units ourselves and have 11 employees. So I think that's a abbreviated version of the track, but I'll stop there because I think that gets us to where we're at now.
Yeah, man. Hey, I love that. And, that's, turning adverse. The other thing, I think the thing I liked in your story there was where you had a decision, when tough times come, there's one of two things are going to happen. You can either, and you had, you had modeled to you what happens when you make the wrong decisions.
Exactly.
And so you can choose, well, I can follow that model or I can do an about face and
that's right.
Do something different. So good for you for, and that's a tougher one. I mean,
it is.
Downhill is easy.
That's right.
Downhill is easy. And so, man, that's impressive. That is very impressive. So let's talk then, a little bit maybe about how you got into multifamily. Like, that we kind of glossed over that phase, but like, what was your real estate journey inside of that, outside of, hey, I'm going to read some books. Now I own 1,100 units. What happened?
Yep. So when I was fired from that job, I actually started a sales consulting company, but I took a position with a $50 million fund here in Kansas City that were buying single family homes. Yeah. And I was their head of acquisitions. And so I had this company over here and I was also doing 10 or 11 acquisitions for these guys a month. And 6 months in, my wife is very strategic. It's one of her top talents from StrengthFinder. She said, hey, you need to focus. And she said, you have to pick. And so I did. And I picked real estate. So I dissolved the sales consulting firm. I finished up the fund, 265 doors, went through a big CoreVest portfolio refinance and gave back 88% of the capital to those investors. And it still cash flowed. And at that time, I was really curious how those sponsors, set up that that fund. And so I sat down with them and they said a word that I had not heard to that point, which was syndication. And so I decided to go on the educational route and learn everything I could about syndication. And I said, okay, that's what I want to do. I took my idea to my current broker. He said, no way, I can't do that. You're going to get crushed by the big guys. And I said, okay, see you later. I left, moved my license to a commercial and multifamily brokerage, started to get experience representing out-of-state buyers executing 1031 exchanges, brokered $150 million worth of real estate, started to buy some myself and learned the process from the ground up, acquisition, rehab, everything myself. And I said, okay, I'm going to take the learnings that I've found doing transactions as well as pairing them with syndication, but I need a team. I got to find some people to help me. And so I started just knocking on every door I could in Kansas City to see who was doing this. And, it took 6 months or 7 months or so. And I finally found two guys that were as hungry as me, that had good experience on the operation side, development side, and the finance side. And I said, okay, I'm going to go find projects. I'm going to find investors. You guys help get these things stabilized, run the operation, and let's create a team. And that's what we did. And so, and then COVID-19 obviously happened last year. And so knowing this market is as good as that we do, I just said, look, I think that we have a big opportunity right now where nobody else is going to be buying assets. And, you know, frankly, that was a good thesis. We were able to get 900 doors over the finish line last year alone, which was incredible at price points now that are being doubled in the same market. So I'm very happy about those transactions. But, you know, through that trajectory, we learned that we needed some support. We needed some team members. And so we started hiring. And that's what our journey has been for the last 6 months, is just getting the right team members on board and focused on growing the operational capacity so we can continue to scale. So using leverage in the terms of people, capital, and technology has been really important. We started with the people and the tech. And, you know, we're applying leverage to the capital side as well. But at the end of the day, you know, we've grown to 11 employees now to service our portfolio and to continue to find new acquisitions. And so my time is spent pouring into those people more or less than it is trying to do everything myself this day. And that's why I'm able to continue to work on profit producing activities now.
Right, man, that's great. And, you know, and I love the idea of working on profit producing activities. There's so many things that we can get sucked into that are just not adding to the bottom line.
And that's right.
If you're going to grow a company, you got to focus on the things that bring that the profit in the door.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, we've talked quite a bit on this show about pouring into your team and your people. One thing we don't spend a lot of time on is really the technology side of things.
Sure.
And I'm curious, you know, when you say that, what does that mean?
Yes. So in our business as real estate operators, because there's a big difference between a syndicator who's raising capital and placing it with operators and being an operator yourself. We always say there's a difference between being a real estate investor and being in the business of real estate investing. We are in the business of real estate investing, asset management, construction. We own an HVAC company, all of that. And so what I decided to do was say, let's break down every single activity in our business and figure out, one, how we put a process around it, track it, and get it to the finish line. And two, how can we do it using technology so it can scale from 1,100 to 11,000 units, right? So I'll just give you a quick example. The first was taking ownership of the financials of our properties. And now, I don't mean this from the standpoint of just working with your property manager, but we decided to actually implement ResMan, which is a property management software that we are going to run alongside our property manager. So we don't have to say, hey, we need this report, we need that report. Guess what? We have it all internally. So whenever I need to write investor monthly reports, we have all of those documentation that we can actually go write those reports effectively. The second would be utilizing Slack as a communication tool. We were doing text messages before, and Slack has been a game changer for our business. The third one is Monday, which is a task management software. We have all of our due diligence, acquisition, you know, disposition checklists on Monday. We run all of our meetings off of that. And then the last one was our investor portal, which, you know, obviously gives access to our investors to log in, see the acquisition that we're going through, and actually subscribe to it. So that's four ways that we have used different vendors. We do use things on the marketing side as well, such as Canva, ActiveCampaign, WordPress, obviously, and different things like that. But those are all things that we did not have implemented 12 months ago. Some of them we did, but some of them we didn't. And that's allowed us to have exposure and transparency to our properties, to our investors, and be able to communicate in a much more effective way, which has been a game changer for my time and our team's time. So those are some examples, Sam.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And thanks for giving us, you know, really kind of the details on the exact products, you know, that you're working with. I think, you know, one of the things that you know, I think is we've seen so many investor portals come out. There's a lot of brands of them out there. And you know, I don't want to say one's better than another on this show necessarily, but I think just the advent of those, it has really, like you said, it just made things so much easier.
Yes.
With a simple calculation, we can calculate all the distributions, the waterfall, the prefs, all that stuff, and have it go straight to their accounts for, I don't know what it costs. Like,
sure.
It's cheap.
Yes.
So, you know, I think things like that are fantastic. But what I've also found is that sometimes implementing those technologies can take an incredible amount of time.
Absolutely.
Are you particularly gifted at that, or is there someone on your team that is gifted at that?
Well, I am gifted at getting started in something. And so what I'm gifted at doing is not sitting through a demo and working through all of the trainings. It's saying, okay, let me think about how the end user, what is the customer experience actually going to be like? And let me figure out the things, the bells and whistles that I need to be, you know, proficient at. Not everything, but what are the five things in this software that I need to know that's going to affect the customer experience for our investors, for our sellers, for our buyers, everything. And so that's what I'm effective at. And then I say, okay, this is what I'm struggling with in these softwares. Let's go troubleshoot what that is. I think if you start trying to understand all of the capabilities of a new technology or a new software, you get stuck in paralysis by analysis. But if you just get in there, start using it, then you start to figure things out, or you start to say, hey, this is what I need some support with. And so Resmin has been a massive undertaking. I mean, we have a full-time bookkeeper, and her whole job is just to get the financials clean and uploaded on a regular basis. It's crazy. And the Syndication Pro is the same way. Obviously, we have to understand, what does this look like to our investors? How are they going to subscribe? And we've had iterations on, you know, the ability to actually subscribe in the portal, because, you know, there's certain things like, hey, if you don't check mark this, then that doesn't show up. And then the investor misses it. Then you got to download it on DocuSign and resend it. You know, different things like that has been, you know, really important for us to say, let's find a solution to this, because no longer do we only have five investors on a project. We might have 50 investors on a project. So I'm not sending 50 DocuSigns out. Let's get ahead of that right now. So the way we've done that is just been really radically transparent with investors to say, hey, here's a document that we have put together that is kind of an FAQ that shows you, hey, these are kind of the certain areas where people get held up on, or they might have some struggles with. And just read this document before you go through the process. So setting those expectations up front has created much more efficiency on the back end of not having to go back and get it done the right way. And I learned that through my collegiate experience of pouring concrete and building walls. I had a mentor in that business that said, hey, measure twice, cut once. Well, I had to measure five times and cut twice, but still I didn't have to cut five times, right? So it's the same mentality. Try to do it the right way the first time. And that's going to minimize all of your back end support that you're going to have to do after the fact.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I like that. There's that, but then there's the other side of it where you see you just got to get in.
That's right.
Start using it and, you know, make your mistakes and do like you and I sound like we both have done the same thing where you get halfway through an investor portal and your signings are all messed up. And you're like, scrap it. We're going to DocuSign.
Yep.
Sorry, everyone, for your wasted time. Here's
That's
your
right.
DocuSign link. Yeah,
exactly.
Been there. But, you know, once you get it figured out, I mean, it's like, oh yeah, this is a game changer.
That's right. That's right. And the other piece that I will say, from a scalability standpoint, is if you are in the business of raising capital, which I think both of us are, sure, you have to be able to do it in a way that does not take your manual time. Prime example is this. Typically, when a new investor signs up either on our portal or through our website, in the past, I have been the one that sees that email and then sends the welcome email. Well, we just hired a marketing director, and guess what? She's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And I said, well, I haven't had time to figure out ActiveCampaign to apply a tag that puts this automation in here. She said, well, guess what? I'm going to do that. And so it's just like things like that, when we have a new project or something like that, or new lead that comes in, they have to be able to be serviced without you manually going and doing that. Because if you're anything like me, Sam, I'm in meetings, you know, from 9 to 5 almost every single day, emails piling up. I'm not in my email on a regular basis like that. And so I want to make sure that we're getting those things done and those are scalable, because as you continue to grow, obviously you can't be that same person sending 50 of those emails a week. I mean, that's just, you got to think about that. That's at least 3 hours. And one thing Naval Ravikant taught me was, look, you got to put a dollar amount on your hour and an aspirational dollar amount. And if the tasks that you're doing are not even close to that aspirational dollar amount, you got to automate, eliminate, or delegate those three things.
Right. I love that, Logan. Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's a sound piece of advice. Let's switch the conversation here just slightly. You know, you guys have scaled and you've scaled pretty fast, especially now 900 doors last year. where they're outside of the COVID, whatever, you know, craziness, you know, have you guys experienced any pitfalls or surprises along the way?
You know what? Everybody keeps saying debt's so cheap, debt's so easy to get. Well, I asked those people, how many agency loans have you done and how many loans have you got over the finish line? Because holy cow, yes, the interest rates may look very cheap, but guess what? There's different waivers that Fannie and Freddie make you sign to be able to get those loans. And these originators, not dogging on any of them, send me emails every day that says, I'm going to get you 2.75%. But what they don't tell you, there's five or six different waivers the property or you have to pass to be able to get to those things. So just honestly, you know, equity raising has not necessarily been the issue for us, thankfully, knock on the wood desk here, because I think investors are really hungry for yield and for good tangible assets right now. But what has been a struggle is, you know, finding lenders, finding banks, finding loans that we can get over the finish line in these tight timelines that all of these deals require. And so that's been a major struggle for us. You know, I mean, it's cost us a lot of money in regards to extra financing contingencies that we have to put in our offers, in putting more earnest money deposit up or another contingency in that says, hey, for another 30 days, we're going to give you another 50 grand. That's been a real struggle and a real challenge that I think not a lot of people are talking about, because they're like, oh, you can go get a loan from anyone. I would like to ask those people when the last time they got a loan is, because it's not as easy as people think. People are not just going to give you money. You have to have experience. You got to have a project that meets criteria, and you got to have liquidity and net worth to be able to cover the loan that you're getting. And so that's not something that I hear talked about a lot, but is one challenge that we have definitely had to overcome the last 12 months, Sam.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, like you said, in the last 12 months, I mean, there was a short window there last year where it was especially difficult to get financing.
That's right.
That, you know, that's a really interesting point you make there, you know, and especially on the agency side. So, and, you know, of course, we've seen the iterations now of what, you know, bridge debt has come out as like the popular, you know, go-to, especially if you're closing fast, but even so,
yeah,
you know, that you still got to hit all the hurdles you just mentioned. So,
yeah. The other challenge that we've had, Sam, I would say, as principals growing a business, growing from three guys, you know, handling everything to growing to 11 employees has been a fun challenge to overcome as well. I think the challenge in that has lied in the fact that, you know, when you're three guys out there doing projects at scale, you know, where energy goes, focus flows, right? And so if you're focused on getting a deal, raising the capital, getting it over the finish line, guess what you're not focused on? Underwriting deals, getting more offers out, focusing. And guess what? After you get both of those done, you're not focused on stabilizing the property and getting it to where it needs to go for your investor returns. So I think that what we learned early on and made a big, you know, goal, and we use the Traction by Gino Wickman. So the entrepreneurial operating system and the VTO, the Vision and Traction Organizer, has been a game changer for our business. But what we saw was, hey, we have to be able to be focused on acquisitions and capital raising, on stabilization, as well as, you know, finding new projects and doing that all at the same time. And so the only way that you do that is get more man or woman power. And that's the big challenge that we've been going through now, is how do we delegate, automate, or eliminate effectively in the right way? And how do we do that in ways that we still feel comfortable doing? We're control freaks. All three of us are. You know, we're all three of us could have our own firm. I guarantee that. But we decided to say, let's do it together and let's do it better. But being solopreneurs and then becoming business owners, there's had to be a mental shift to say, okay, we got to pour into these people. We're going to spend 150% more time right now to be able to get something off of our plate, but we won't ever have to revisit that. And we know that it's getting done. So just like people say, have your money working for you when you're sleeping, you have to have leverage in regards to people and tech that allows your business to run effectively while you're doing profit producing activities. Huge shift in our mentality and the way that our time is spent. Been crazy different.
Man, that's, and you hit it on the head. You're going to have to be able to take the 150% investment now.
That's right.
And that sucks when you're in the, I mean, when things are going a million miles an hour, the last thing that most of us, especially, you know, especially us type A and like, you know, I think we're probably wired the same where it's like, hey, I love to start stuff. Like the last thing we want to do is sit down and prioritize processes. Like,
that's right.
I just want to get stuff done. Like, let's just keep moving. But that's, you'll never get out of that hamster wheel.
That's exactly right. So getting the talent into the business that allows you as the principal to focus in your sweet spot, or what I call, but the Japanese call the ikigai, which is the meaning for life. It's a Venn diagram that I highly recommend folks taking a look at, but it helped me understand my top talents through StrengthFinders and then applied the mental model of ikigai to the commercial real estate business. I found my sweet spot. I know my two business partners' sweet spots. And now we have a way to think about who needs to be focused on what and when. And then we apply that same thing to the talent that we're obviously trying to attract into our business. So their sweet spots line up with their roles. And so just because I'm not a great bookkeeper doesn't mean there's not somebody out there that's fantastic and loves doing that. There is. And so you have to find that person for that role. And so I think just thinking about it that way has been like, oh my gosh, why would anybody ever want to do this? Or why would anybody ever want to manage, you know, contractors to go get units turned? Well, guess what? People love to get stuff done. And that's like, you know, everybody has to-do lists they love to check off. There's some people that say, hey, I love getting units turned, you know? Okay, awesome. Come do that with us because we have 500 of those to do. Let's go knock that out. And it's been exciting to see when you get people in the right seats on the bus, how much faster you can move and get to where you want to go. Because when I was trying to do everything is when I decided, you know, hey, this sucks. I don't enjoy this at all. Let me get back to what I'm good at. And we just tried to apply that on every level. And then as a culture with 11 people now, everybody feels like they're working in their sweet spots. Not all the time. You're never going to have it 100% of the time. But if you understand what those people's talents are and you can get that working in a cohesive group, it's just like the football analogy, right? The quarterback's not the left tackle. The left tackle is not the running back. And there's a reason why, you know? And so you get those people in the right positions, man. And it can be powerful.
Man, this is great. This is great. Logan, I have certainly enjoyed this. Thank you so much for sharing your time, your talents, your wisdom with us here today.
Thank you. Yeah.
Let's jump into the final four questions.
Okay.
First one is this. If I were to give you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
I would spend it getting to know the people that are playing at a higher level in my market. So I'd use that $20,000 for a little bit of education to get me to the point where I could at least understand the mechanics of the business. Because just before this podcast interview, I had somebody reach out to me and had a call. I could tell that this person had done research, not only on our company, but had read a lot of books. That says to me, okay, I'm actually going to pour into this person. But if somebody calls me and says, hey man, how is the syndication structured? What? Why? Go read 50 articles on my website or anybody else's website on how they're structured. So I would learn the education piece. Then I would figure out where they're hanging out. Maybe that's a country club. Maybe that's certain restaurants. Maybe that's certain networking events. I would go to those and I would pay to be around those people. And then I would do my best to figure out a way to get time with those people. Whether that be, hey, let me come work with you. Let me come be an intern with you. Let me come do any of that stuff just to spend time around what you've got going on. And I think $20,000 would get eaten up really quickly right there. But that time that you're getting from those people is so much more valuable than that. So I wouldn't say, you know, necessarily in any recommendations on books or anything like that, but you have to have a baseline knowledge and then get around those right folks. And you're going to see a huge ROI on that time.
Love it. Love it. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Well, I think I've said this a few times on the podcast, Sam, but I would say this: do not try to do everything in this business. You cannot be a jack of all trades and a master of none. You have to understand where your sweet spot is, figure out how to overlay that in the business that you're starting and stay within that sweet spot. That's the only way you're going to stay sustainable and you're going to actually have results that matter. So I would say, don't try to do everything. Learn what you can be good at and what you are good at, and that's sustainable, and focus on those areas in the business.
Great. Fantastic. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one way you are making the world a better place?
You know, I'm a big Catholic guy, Sam, and I have been blessed in my life up to this point. I live in the United States of America. You know, I have a beautiful family, but I, on a regular basis, driving around Kansas City, Jeff City, there was no homeless people. And in Kansas City, I can drive 3 minutes from my house and find four of them on the street. And so what got me interested in commercial real estate was, how can I overlay helping the homeless, helping the hungry, and figure out how to do that in my space of real estate? So I'm on the board of directors of a nonprofit here in Kansas City that helps end homelessness. We do rapid rehousing. We have units that they can live in. We master lease with tenants across the metro area. And so I'm really focused on trying to figure out, what's the root cause? Okay. What's a decent solution? And where can I actually add value in that? I can't solve the whole problem, but what I can do is understand it and then maybe go try to do some good work in regards to doing my part to ending that. So that's one way, Sam. The other is, I run a food pantry here in Kansas City, and I love delivering food to different shelters around the city. So highly focused with folks that are not in a house right now, or a home or an apartment, and people that don't have food, because, you know, I do, and I'm not any better than those people. So let me do my part to try to give back. That's where I focus my time on that front.
Love it, man. That's great. Logan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Has to be LinkedIn. You know, I'm on LinkedIn on a regular basis, post there every single day, at least 3 to 4 times, Logan Freeman there. But if you're not on LinkedIn, FTWinvestmentsLLC.com, great resources there. You can reach out to me on that website.
Awesome. Logan, thank you so much.
Sam, thanks for having me on, man.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.